The following program is intended as an educational program, not as investment advice or as a recommendation to buy, sell, or participate in any investment vehicle, product, offering, or strategy. Investment advisory services are offered through Turning Point Financial, a registered investment advisor. Any references to specific securities, investment vehicles, or strategies are intended only as examples, not as recommendations. All investments involve risk, including the possibility of losing money. Do you ever wonder how your money and the stuff you own is actually helping you to live out what you really feel called to in your heart? There's so much peace of mind that comes when you sense that your money is aligned with your values and convictions. And there's really, really peace of mind that comes when you just know that your financial goals are in sync with your values and convictions. There's so much anxiety that happens when that's not the case. It's easier said than done. There's so much financial information coming at us every single minute of every single day.
It can actually be overwhelming. Terminology, ideas, and philosophies, various competing principles, and of course, financial products and services.
Yeah, it can be downright confusing.
Possibly even scary.
Yeah, possibly even scary. That's right. And when you're confused or scared, you don't make good decisions. And that can keep you from being all that God wants you to be, and it can hurt you pretty badly as well. Welcome to Money and Mission, where every week we talk about wealth management on a foundation of biblical wisdom. A great big shout out to our friends here at WHYF AM 720 for airing the show. And Joe Nebesinski is sitting right across the desk. He's smiling because I got that right, right? WHYF AM 720. I'm James Good.
And I am Eric Terrio.
We're co-hosting the show here.
That's right. And each week in the first part of our show, we will talk about some current financial events so you'll have a better understanding of what some of the terminology and events actually mean.
Part of the way through the show, we'll get to our weekly puzzle. A weekly puzzle is a brain teaser that we'll share with you. And we said this last week, you know, we don't know if the puzzle is always interesting to everyone listening, but it's interesting to us.
That's right.
And we're on the radio, so we get to share the puzzle.
That's right.
That's right.
So, James, what are some recent financial news highlights?
Yeah, recent. Right. It's interesting because we're recording the show, right? Not doing it live. So we cannot quite say, you know, yesterday. But recently we have heard that the S&P 500 index hit a new all-time high. And several other major indices also hit new all-time highs.
That's right. But before we get into the news of the S&P 500, explain to our listeners what an index is.
Yeah, that's a great question. What in the world is a market index? Well, an index really is just a list of stocks. Sometimes it's a list of bonds, and the list is compiled and constructed using certain rules.
And there are many indexes out there, correct?
Thousands of indexes. Yeah, we usually hear, when you hear the market is up, usually people are thinking about the S&P 500 index or when the market is down, right?
That's
up
right.
or down, because that's really plastered in front of us. Another common index that we hear about is the Dow Jones index and the NASDAQ. Mm-hmm. But yes, there are thousands of indexes.
Well, let's dig into the S&P 500. Tell us a little bit about the S&P 500 as opposed to the other indices.
Sure. So the S&P 500 index really consists of stocks of companies that are in different industries. And those industries are called economic sectors. Sometimes you hear them referred to as broad economic groups.
Well, what are some examples of these broad economic groups?
Yeah, that's a wonderful piece of terminology, right? Broad economic group. It sort of makes you wonder exactly what they're talking about. There's actually 10 broad economic groups, right? There are utilities, real estate, communications, technology, energy, consumer staples, consumer discretionary, healthcare, financials, and did I say energy already? I think I may have.
Yeah, I think you did.
That's right.
That's okay.
That's where, you know, you're reading down through the 10 and can't remember if you already read that one or not, right? Suddenly someone's going to say, oh, that's 12. But no, there's 10 basic broad economic groups. Like
so that. As far as the utilities groups, I know I have PECO for my electric, mm-hmm. and that's a utility company, correct?
Right, yes, and my electric is at PPNL,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's a number of electric companies that deliver electricity to people and businesses, and all those companies are part of the, if they're publicly traded, we should say, right? If they have stock mm-hmm. that's publicly traded, then they fall into that utilities broad economic group. But electric companies are just one part of that utilities group. There are
water companies.
Water companies, mm-hmm. that's right. And then you can further really break that down. There's regulated utilities and so on and so forth. We don't have time to get into all the subgroups here on the show today. But
and then you mentioned real estate.
Real estate, that's right. Now, again, remember we're talking about companies that have stocks that are publicly traded in the market. So that's an important point to be included in the S&P 500 as an index. The stock of that company has to be publicly traded. So, yeah, there are a number of different types of publicly traded real estate, and some of those companies are landlords. They own malls or shopping centers. Sometimes they'll own standalone locations like coffee shops. Those are my favorite. Or they rank donuts, donut shops.
And office space, would that be included in that?
Office space? Yeah, office space could be included in that. Again, it needs to be a publicly traded company. But medical facilities, you know, doctor's offices, hospitals, whole entire health systems. If you drive up and down 81, Route 81 or Route 83, you'll see warehouses. And those warehouses are typically owned. Well, some of those warehouses are owned directly by companies, but then other times they're owned by, again, real estate companies that just own warehouses and lease those warehouses out.
So how about the communication group? Verizon, Comcast, would they fall into that category?
They would. Yeah, we were just talking about communications before the show got started here today, right? But certainly phone companies are there. And you know what? Let's move on to a different topic because phone companies is not really one of my favorites.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I know you like peanut butter cups, so let's talk about consumer staples.
Would peanut butter cups be a staple or discretionary? Where would you put that?
I would say a candy bar is rather essential, James.
It's rather, yeah, okay.
But discretionary.
Is that like the Big Mac, too, we were talking about last week? A staple.
That's right.
Or discretionary. A Big Mac?
A Big Mac? No.
No.
That's discretionary.
That's discretionary? Okay.
In my opinion. I don't need to go pick up a Big Mac to eat. I can go
All right. If you're listening to the show and you think a Big Mac is a staple, send us an email, right, at radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com. That wasn't on our script, okay, but you can send us an email anyway. We'd really like to hear if you think a Big Mac
What are some staples
is a staple.
In your lives?
But what are some staples? Oh, these are companies that make things like, you know, diapers, let's say, baby powder, food items, sodas and snacks. Band-Aids. We do actually have peanut butter and jelly, you know, on there as part of the official list. Cereal, different food items, French fries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So these are companies that make and sell staples, the kinds of products that people use every single day.
And then the discretionary category, companies that make and sell things people use but may or may not really need.
Sure. Yeah, like restaurants, hotels, certainly. I mean, sometimes hotels are really important, like for conference centers and so on and so forth. But hotels are really tied like to the travel industry. So people travel with discretionary dollars, and that's not really something that people need.
How about the technology sector?
Technology, absolutely. And, you know, remember, these are all part of the S&P 500 index, right? So when we say the S&P 500 index hit all-time highs, it kind of, you know, it's interesting to think about what all goes into that S&P 500 index, right?
And how they're so connected, right?
And they are so connected. That's right. So, for example, you may have a technology company that is rents a building as for their business, or even a fast food restaurant may rent a building, so they would pay rent to the landlord, who may be a company that owns the real estate. And so they're something that's in the consumer discretionary part of the world actually sort of sends income to the real estate part of the world. So companies are very interconnected. And it's fascinating to me, you know, I'm with these 10 different groups. I'm looking at a sheet here of the growth over the last 10 years of the different segments and the different broad economic groups in the S&P 500 index. And it's interesting to me that nine of the 10 groups, quote, underperformed the index. One group in particular, technology, over the last 10 years outperformed the index. Everything else underperformed. So that kind of tells us that most of the growth that we've seen in our stock market over the last 10 years has been in one single sector and one single group.
So if the S&P 500 index is reaching new all-time highs, does that mean that the economy is doing well?
Well, not necessarily, and we'll talk more about that when we come back from our break. We are right at the end of our first segment here today, so we do have to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about this dichotomy of a stock market that appears to be rising, but not everything really participating in that. So stay tuned. You're listening to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720. Welcome back to Money and Mission, where we're talking about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. We talk about money and mission. It's so important for us to understand the mission that we have and what we believe we're called to be as people, where we're trying to go. But we need to understand how the money works, too. Sometimes it's easy to forget about the mission in the middle of discussing the money. But today we're really focused on the money. And I am James.
And I am Eric.
Yeah, we're co-hosting the show here today.
James, in the last segment, we finished talking about all of the economic groups included in the S&P 500 index. What's fascinating is how each of those groups relate to each other. How about you talk about why is our economy so connected?
Yeah, connected. That's a really key word. And, you know, economies have always been connected, right?
You gave a few examples in the first segment.
That's right, all throughout history. But things are connected like that because an economy is just really a series of transactions, right? People doing business with each other and businesses doing business with each other. Let's just think about, for example, how a product actually is made. Let's just pick a product, I don't know, this coffee cup that's sitting here in front of me, right? Mm-hmm. Some company made that coffee cup. Mm-hmm. And what all went into making that coffee cup?
Well, I see that's it's a metal thermos. There's a plastic lid.
Mm-hmm.
That looks like a rubber seal.
Right. So there were some supplies, mm-hmm. certainly, that went
inputs,
there.
Inputs, for sure. Mm-hmm. But there's more than just inputs, right?
There's people. Some people were involved in making that mug, so that means there was payroll mm-hmm. somewhere.
And that can be one of the largest expenses for a company.
It can be one of the largest. But right there, all of a sudden, there's a little bit of a connection that gets made, because when employees receive payroll and they go live their life, then they're spending that money with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that business is also making a product or a service.
So it keeps rolling it back into the economy.
It keeps rolling it back in. That's right. We'll talk more about that as we go here. But whoever was the company that made this coffee mug then probably had to turn on the lights.
Mm-hmm.
So they paid their electric bill, and that sent money to the electric company, which turned into revenue for the or income. Right.
And they have a landlord that they're paying rent to.
They might have a landlord. That's right.
Or if they own the property, then they're paying taxes.
Then they're
on
paying
that property.
Taxes, in which case money is going to a local government somewhere. That's right. So we have materials to make the product, and we have people and electricity, utilities that need to get paid, rent on the building, and so on and so forth. So, but coffee cups are not the only thing that require inputs, right?
Yeah. How about, I know I cut my hand not too long ago. I put on a Band-Aid.
A Band-Aid, that's right. So when you make a Band-Aid, I've never been in the Band-Aid manufacturing business, right? But when you make a Band-Aid, you need a little gauze, piece of gauze, mm-hmm. right, to put on the Band-Aid. So
Adhesive,
that's right. And maybe the little plastic strips that are used. And those all have to be manufactured somewhere. And
then, about the paper around the Band-Aid, where we try to get our little thumbnails in there and separate it, get it apart. And
that's
hard.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes you give yourself a paper cut while you're trying to open the Band-Aid.
And you need a second one.
That's right. They need a second one. And then they usually come in a box, too. Mm-hmm. Or they used to come in little metal containers, but now they're in boxes. So somebody has to make the box and the ink to print on the box and so on and so forth. So you have all these different inputs. And whenever that is manufactured or when it's put together, somebody spends money for that, and that money goes to another business somewhere who also employs people and so on and so forth.
And each one of those dollars from those different inputs or expenses from that company, they land in one of those broad economic groups.
They do. That's right. They land in one of those and that either helps that group to grow or not. It just depends how money is flowing, in those groups. But it's interesting. We always like to highlight that when money lands somewhere, that there's an opportunity for people to be doing business in a certain way. And the way in which people do business can either be a reflection of biblical principles and or not. It's just different ways of conducting business. But what are some other just products that we could think about together here in this segment?
Well, how about that stool we're sitting on?
The stool? I was hoping you were going to say peanut butter cups.
We already covered that.
Well, we already covered that.
The show can't always be about peanut butter cups.
That's right. That's right. I can't just stay focused on one thing. So, yeah, chairs, anything that we touch, things that mm-hmm. we use, things that are in our homes, these are all various and sundry products, and businesses are connected to each other through this series of transactions that are used to make those products.
And right? How we're so connected, we're able to make these complex products. I heard someone say a while back that even something as simple as a number 2 pencil would have been super complicated a long time ago.
That's right.
They're so separated in those groups, from the rubber to the wood.
That's
to
right.
The metal.
That's right. And of course, we live in a globally connected world, in probably more so than at any other point in time in history. So we have money flowing around in our country, in the United States here, and we have money flowing between countries. And the degree to which people spend more money is really one way that you can tell whether an economy is growing or whether an economy is stagnant or if it's shrinking, actually.
So inside of an organization, who makes the decision to allocate money to those different inputs?
So typically an organization will have a person or sometimes a group of people that are referred to as purchasing managers. And a purchasing manager is just responsible for buying the stuff that that business needs. You know, a person is responsible for buying things for their own household. And then on a much larger scale, if you're in the process of manufacturing Band-Aids, for example, then you have to buy all the supplies to make millions of Band-Aids. And so right. those orders tend to be very large orders. And when that company has more and more orders for Band-Aids, then they have to have more and more orders for the little gauze strips that go on the Band-Aid and so on and so forth.
And speaking of indexes, there's also what's called a purchasing manager's index, correct?
There is a purchasing manager's index. And the purchasing manager's index really, so let's kind of back up a little bit from that. Mm-hmm. And what we have in our world, in our country today, is something called the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve is broken down into 12 member banks that are located at different places in the country. And these Federal Reserve banks, among other things, will survey the businesses in their respective geographic locations. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they survey those businesses for is they'll ask them, how much stuff did you guys buy over the last month? And what they do then is they compare how much they bought over the last month to how much they were buying like 12 months ago. And either the business is buying more stuff, more supplies, because they have more orders in their business, so they need to get more inventory to get prepared for those sales. They're either buying more, or they're buying about the same, or they're buying less. So the purchasing manager's index just totals up all the purchases of all the businesses around the country, and it's measured on a scale of 0 to 100. So if the purchasing orders manager's index comes in at more than 50, then that means there's an expansion. Things are growing, right? If it's right at 50, then things are about the same. And if it's less than 50, then that means the economy is contracting. And sometimes that's referred to as a recession, right?
Right.
But yeah. It's interesting, the purchasing, I'm sorry, you were getting ready, you had a question or something, right?
Well, I was just gonna say that, you know, we hear that gross domestic product is up from time to time, but if the purchasing manager's index is going down, then how does GDP actually go up?
Well, let's get to that in a second. We'll observe and just note that 3 years ago, the purchasing manager's index was at like 60, and today is something less than 50. So that has been declining. As you noted, though, GDP, or gross domestic product, is actually up. And how in the world does that work, right? Well, let's kind of think together of an example, maybe a hardware store that just sells lawnmowers. Let's pretend that in this example, we have this little hardware store and the only thing they sell is lawnmowers, right? So if the hardware store were to sell 10 lawnmowers a year, they would have $1,000 of income.
At $100 a piece.
At $100 a piece, right? Mm-hmm. They sell 10 lawnmowers at $100 a piece. That is $1,000 for the year. And that would be like gross domestic product. It would
right.
be the total receipts that, for that hardware store. Now, if the lawnmower that the hardware store sold, if they only sold 9 lawnmowers, then they would sell less, correct?
Right.
And if they were charging $100 per lawnmower, then they would only have $900 of income instead of $1,000. But what if that hardware store decided to raise their prices?
Like to $120.
To $120.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so 9 lawnmowers times $120 would be $1,080.
So this hardware store had a 10% decline in sales.
That's right.
But an 8% increase in income.
That's right. You just charge more for your stuff.
Right.
And then you say, hey, we grew. Right. I mean, it didn't really grow, but you had more sales. You had more to show in terms of your receipts, right? So that's how we can say, hey, gross domestic product is up, but that doesn't necessarily mean the economy is growing, right? If you inflate your economy, then you could still say, hey, we grew, but maybe in real terms you actually didn't, right? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They're not actually contributing back into the economy, but they're showing on paper that they're making more money.
That's right.
They're really not.
That's right. And since everything is so connected, then all the things, all the places a hardware store is sending money to, they may not really be growing either. They might be doing the same kind of thing.
Right. Well, that's interesting. We need to take a break right now. Stay tuned. You are listening to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
Welcome back to Money in Mission, where we're talking about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles.
All right, James, I'm Eric. Before we get into our next segment, let's reveal the answer to last week's puzzle.
Ah, yes, the weekly puzzle.
That's right.
That's right.
The puzzle last week was about a chicken, an ant, a spider, and a dog.
Four.
That's right.
That's right.
And if you recall, the question was, a chicken got $7, an ant got $21, and a spider got $28. How much did the dog get? And the riddle was that the dog received $3.50 for each leg for a total of
$14. $14.
That's right.
That's right. Yeah. So send your answers whenever we do a weekly puzzle. Send your answers to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com. So this week's puzzle, I thought was a really good one. There are two ducks in front of two ducks, and there are two ducks beside two ducks. How many ducks are there?
So there are two ducks in front of two ducks behind two ducks, two ducks to the left side of two ducks, and two ducks to the right side of two ducks.
Well, I just said two ducks beside two ducks.
Okay.
Which is okay. I mean, it could be the left side or the right side.
Right.
Right. Or it could be front or back. Anyway, but so, okay. Two ducks in front of two ducks. Yeah, absolutely. Two ducks behind two ducks, and two ducks beside two ducks. How many ducks are there? Send your answers to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com, and we will read the correct answer on the show next week.
So, James, I know there has been much talk lately about this term, inflation.
Yes, such shifting gears, right?
That's right.
From ducks to inflation.
Let's unpack this a bit and talk about what inflation is, what causes it, and how does this affect us all on a day-to-day basis.
Right. It's like an inflated duck.
Right. Not the Aflac duck on TV.
No, it's a duck in our weekly radio puzzle. Okay, I'm sorry. What was the question? How does inflation work?
Yeah, what is inflation? What are some causes? And more importantly, how does it affect all of us?
Yeah, so mostly we think about inflation in the terms of prices going up.
Mm-hmm.
And we go, oh my goodness, the price went up. That's inflation.
And I know the term too many dollars chasing too few goods.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so really, but let's think this through together. If we had a closed economy, then there really could never be any such thing as inflation. Let's pretend, just for our discussion here today, that we have this little hypothetical economy consisting of four people. It'll be me. Let's pretend that I'm making blueberries or I'm growing blueberries, right? And Eric, you are making pies. And Joe, what do we want Joe to make? Pie pans.
Sure.
Okay. And Russ is going to make
the napkins that we clean ourselves with.
That's right. That's right. So napkins and pie pans and blueberries and pies. And each one of us has $1. So if we each have $1, then our total net worth is how much? $4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Correct.
That's right. So that would be the equivalent of like a national net worth. So in our little tiny hypothetical economy, we each have $1. So let's pretend that, you know, I buy pie pans from Joe this year, and it takes me all year to spend my dollar with him buying pie pans. And Joe buys napkins from Russ, and it takes him all year to spend his napkin money with Russ. And Russ buys pies from you, and it takes him all year to spend a dollar with you.
And then I need blueberries from you.
And you need blueberries. That's right. And it takes you all year to spend your dollar with me. So it took all year for everybody to spend $1. So economists would say that we had a velocity of one.
And a gross domestic product of four.
That's right. Because it took a whole year for all that money to work its way through our little economy.
Correct.
Right. So, you know, if we all got really, really busy and we spent each of our dollars 10 times all the way through, then we would have a velocity of 10, right? And we would then have a gross domestic product of 40.
40.
That's right, because 4 times 10 is 40. But there is no more money still. It's still, we each just have a dollar. So since there was no more money.
Yeah, what would happen to the prices?
Well, nobody would really be able to charge any more. So maybe people are making a whole bunch of products and services, but if there's only $4 in that little economy, then that's the most that anybody would be able to charge for the things that they were making. Because, I mean, Joe could decide to charge, what was Joe making again? Pie pans?
Yes.
He was making pie pans. Joe could decide to charge $5 for his pie pans, but you know what? I've only got a dollar to spend. So Joe's going to figure out pretty quickly that he can't charge $5 for his pie pan because nobody will be able to spend that money. They simply don't have it.
And what if all three of you bought pies for me and I had all three of your dollars? So I had all four of those dollars.
Well, we would not like you.
Right. But I still wouldn't be able to increase my prices.
You probably wouldn't. No, you wouldn't, because still there's only $4. Eventually, you're going to have to spend some of that money and it's going to work its way back through. And there's still only $4. In that little economy.
I know we're talking about a simple example here with only $4 inside of a closed economy.
Mm-hmm.
What were to happen if one person borrowed money from the others inside of that closed economy?
Okay, so like I borrow a dollar from you and I borrow a dollar from Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you would not have that dollar to spend because I had borrowed it from you. And Joe wouldn't have his dollar to spend. So if we only borrowed money from each other, then we would still only have $4 to work with. So in practical terms, still nobody could really raise their prices. And after I spent my money, I would then have to pay Joe back and I'd have to pay you back. So before I could really spend any more money, I'd have to settle up that ledger and eventually we'd be back to where we were. And still nobody could really raise their prices because we only have a finite amount of money to work with.
Those
$4.
Well, now let's say, what would happen if we were to increase that supply of money in that closed economy? Let's say we went from $4 to $8.
Yeah, like let's pretend my wife would go walking by and surreptitiously hand me $4 more.
Now we wouldn't like you.
No, you wouldn't like it. Where'd you get all that money for free, right? Well, no, but then, you know, I'd spend my dollar buying pie pans and it wouldn't be too long before I'd show up with another dollar to buy more pie pans. And then I'd show up pretty quickly with another dollar to buy more. And well, Joe only has a certain number of pie pans.
He's going to say, wait a second.
He's going to say, wait a second. That's right. Eventually Joe's prices are going to go up.
Mm-hmm.
But then Joe has the money, so he's going to be spending it with Russ, and the same thing is going to happen. And so at some point, all the prices are going to rise, and now everybody will have $2 instead of $1. All the prices will be higher, and you know, in a utopian world, that would all happen rather evenly, so everybody would have the same amount of money, everybody would be at the same place they started, but all the numbers would be bigger.
So what would happen if Karen came back knocking and said, James, I want my money back?
Well, that would be a problem. that would be a problem.
Because, and now we're back down to $4.
And now we're back down to $4. That's right. If I had borrowed it from her.
Right.
But let's pretend that she was just able to create that out of nothing, let's say. Let's say she was just able to...
A.K.A. print those $4?
That's right. I didn't want to say that. But yeah, but let's say she was able to print print the money. Or what if, and this is kind of an example that we may run out of time on this segment, but let's say that I decided to deposit my money into the bank. Well, banks have something that is called a reserve requirement, and that means that for every... We all know that when you deposit money in the bank, your banker does not just stick the money in a little drawer and hold it there until you come back, right?
They loan that out.
They loan it out, yeah. So a bank...
They're making money on your money.
That's right. But a bank has to keep a certain amount of money on hand so that they can fund requests for withdrawals to come out of their bank. And the amount of money that a bank has to keep on hand is called the reserve requirement. So let's pretend that a $10,000 deposit gets made in the bank and the bank has to keep 5% of that money on hand. That means the bank would have, out of the $10,000, the bank would have $9,500 to loan out to somebody else, right?
Right.
And that person would go out and do business, and $9,500 would make it into somebody else's hands. And then that person would take their $9,500 and deposit it in the bank as well. And the bank would keep 5% of that on hand. But then the bank would have, out of the $9,500, they'd have $9,025 to loan out. And this could keep going on and on and on. So one $10,000 deposit would actually stretch through almost 200 different transactions, and one single $10,000 deposit would actually create $199,992 of economic activity, just because the bank doesn't have to keep all your money sitting there. It can, you know, it loans the money out, and then it goes and works its way through the economy. So that's another way that we could, quote, have more money in our economy and prices could eventually go up.
So there's not more dollars being introduced, but the purchasing power is being increased.
That's right. That's right. Through the use of debt.
Now, what would happen if folks wanted to get their money out and they want to withdraw all their funds?
That is a topic
that would call a bank run, right?
That would be called, yes, that would be a problem. And we can't really discuss that in 40 seconds that we have left, but it would be a bank run and it would be a problem. That's right. So if we have this situation where we can create purchasing power sort of out of thin air like that, then that increases demand. And if we don't have more products and services to buy, then the products and services will go up in price.
That's right. Well, we are all out of time in this segment. We will be back after the break to talk about planning ahead among the various economic conditions that we have discussed. You are listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here with James Good
and Eric Terrio,
where we are talking about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles.
That's right, James. So in the other segments, we talked about our economy, the 8 broad groups that make up our economy.
The 10, that's correct.
And how the S&P 500 continues to set new highs. Well, we talk about the Purchasing Managers Index and how year-over-year decline is having an effect, as well as the pressure inflation is putting on not only the companies who make these products, but us everyday Americans. What principles should we be looking to in order to navigate this uncertain and uncharted territory our economy is headed?
Yeah, so it is super important. You mentioned principles, and it is so important to be focused on those principles. And it's not easy, because when it feels like your money is just disappearing in front of you as a result of inflation, then it's easy to get really focused on the money as opposed to the principles. But supply and demand is a very, very real thing. And it's something that we have to deal with. And we have to be aware of it. We have to understand how money works, that, you know, when there's greater purchasing power and no corresponding increase in goods and services, then prices will eventually increase. And, you know, unfortunately, it does seem that the financial leadership in our country, and I think even in our world today, is committed to this idea of creating inflation. I'm looking here at a presentation that was made 22 years ago by Ben Bernanke. At that point, he was not yet the Federal Reserve Chair, but he mentions in his presentation that in a fiat money system, that any determined government can create higher prices simply by putting more money into the system. Positive inflation, really, like that. So it's an interesting presentation. The title of the presentation is Deflation, Making Sure It Doesn't Happen Here. And you can probably look that up on the internet somewhere. So it's a real thing that we've got to deal with, and we have to be aware of how money works. But it's super important to be focused on those principles as well.
Right. And the effect of the last few years of high inflation are now baked into the products that we buy. And they're still rising.
That's right.
And we see that inflation has fallen some, but it's like the analogy of a car going down a highway. If that car reduces its speed from 65 miles per hour to 45 miles per hour, it's driving away from us still. It's not getting closer. So prices are still rising, just at a slower pace.
Just at a slower pace. That's exactly right. So I think one of the first principles that we really want to highlight here is that money is not wealth. Money is a medium of exchange. I mean, it feels like wealth. We always want more of it, but money is a medium of exchange.
That's right. It's just a tool, right? And it's the assets that you can acquire with money that have the real value. I've heard the phrase, if you were stuck on an island with a crate full of money, you'd be dead in a week. So what good is that for us?
That is so true. That's right. And often the things that are most valuable out there are really things that you could never buy with money.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Memories, let's say, you know, when families create memories together, and when you think about maybe some of the people in your own family tree, you know, if your grandfather meant so much to you, et cetera, usually when people think about that kind of thing, they're not talking about how much money this person had. They're talking about how special they were and the character they had and so on and so forth. So, you know, it's really important for us to think about how we use our money in a way that conveys values and really creates lasting wealth in that right. In that regard.
And it was important you said that it doesn't buy the most important things. I mean, love, more time on this earth, it certainly won't buy us that.
That's right. And you don't take it with you when you go. In spite of the jokes about different people showing up at the pearly gates, you know, whatever. I should have prepared one of those for today, and I didn't, right?
Right.
But money is a tool, and it gets things done. Money is a test as well. It sort of tests what we have in our hearts. Jesus said, right, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Mm-hmm.
And money in that regard then is a testimony as well, because the things you do with your money kind of put on display what's in your heart and what your thoughts are. Regardless of whether your money is worth a lot, if the peanut butter cups you buy are big or small, right?
That's right.
That's right. You can have wonderful memories eating them at any size.
We should change the show to Money and Peanut Butter Cups.
Money and Peanut Butter Cups. We will get off the peanut butter cups eventually, I promise.
Right? Next time we'll bring in a pack, we'll share.
That's right. But there's feelings, you know, there's feelings involved, right? When you see the cost of things going up and you look at how much money you have available, and it feels like maybe your money is not going to buy as much.
Because those higher costs eventually result in higher prices that we have to pay.
That's
right.
At
the grocery store, at the department store, gas prices.
That's right. But it's so important to not be, spending and making decisions based on those feelings. Solomon, thousands of years ago, in the book of Ecclesiastes, wrote these words, "Whoever loves money will never have enough. And whoever loves wealth will never be satisfied with their income. This too," as he said, "is meaningless."
Mm-hmm.
It's pointless, right? It's because it's not the stuff that really lasts. In the New Testament, 1 Timothy 6:6, I think that was the Apostle Paul writing at the time, he said, "Godliness with contentment is great gain." He didn't say a thing about the money. Although I think a couple verses later, he did mention, you don't take it with you when you go. Right? So these are just principles, right, that we really, really need to make sure we keep front and center. And I always think it's a good idea, you know, if you're building an investment portfolio, have your Bible laying open next to you as you are working on your financial statements.
Mm-hmm.
It helps to keep you grounded. And if you're running a business and you're writing an employee benefit manual, have the book of Proverbs open next to you there. And there are creative ways to build biblical principles into those business documents as well, right? If you have engaged an attorney to help you set up employee benefits, for example, talk with the attorney about how to build that in. Or work with an attorney that has a commitment as well, you know, to biblical principles. So we want to stay very, very focused on that. Solomon also talked about risk, financial risk, which many times we don't think that the Bible really discusses financial risk like that. But in Ecclesiastes as well, Solomon said, divide your portion to 7 and even 8 because you don't know what evil may befall you. You don't know when something is going to blow up in your face. So divide your portion. He was talking about spreading your wealth at that point. And so it's important to understand how to employ effective diversification in our investments and in our personal wealth, in our businesses, and so on. It's important to understand how to employ those principles so that we can be building on that kind of a biblical principle and that kind of wisdom.
Right. It's so important to be diversified. Different asset classes react differently to economic conditions. You know, we have stocks, bonds, real estate, commodities, and cash. Each have unique characteristics and respond differently to economic events like inflation, interest rate changes, mm-hmm. and market fluctuations.
That's right.
Diversifying across asset classes can help mitigate the impact of these events on your overall financial position.
That's right. And understanding the picture, again, can help to make a difference in how you structure your wealth, your financial life, and your ability to realize and live out your life's mission.
So what are some things that folks can do listening to this, and what steps can they take in their lives to be aligned with those principles?
Yeah, well, a couple more principles like that. First, we say live within your means.
Mm-hmm.
We do believe that is a biblical principle, that God created the world in such a way that all of the things out there that we see in nature just naturally live within their means. And, plants are just a great example of that, where energy gets stored up in the off seasons so that when the on season is there, that there's energy to bloom. So it's important to live within our means, to keep some of our wealth for investment. If we're living within our means and we have to do something with that money, and if we are keeping it available for investment, then there's an opportunity to grow. It's kind of like maintaining margin.
Right.
Right. But we think about margin in terms of finances, and we really need to keep margin on our calendars as well. Make sure that we are living our lives in a way that has margin and not just being frantic all the time with so many things to do. Staying productive as long as possible. Wow, that's something we're going to talk about on another show. This whole concept of retirement and what it means. Calculating your costs, knowing what things are going to cost you. Periodically reviewing your planning and the outcomes. These are all things people can be doing to be working on good principles like that. I do think we're kind of coming up to the end of our show here.
Yes.
That's right.
Running out of time. Can't really dive into those any deeper.
That's right. We spent a lot of time today talking about some things that are problematic and possibly even can create worry. I just want to remind you that worry is like a rocking chair, though. It gives you plenty to do, but it doesn't get you anywhere. So make sure that you are in prayer about your own planning and your finances. Next week, we're so excited about the guests that we're going to have on the show.
Kathy and Sam.
Yeah, Kathy Troxell and Sam Kagundu. I'm sure I did not say his name correctly the right way. But Sam is from
Kenya.
Kenya. He goes by Samuel, actually, I think. But he is involved with something called the Mercy School Sunflower Seed Oil Project.
Hmm.
Right. Last week we talked about businesses that resulted from good planning. This is another great example of good planning.
Well, I can't wait to hear what they have to say and tell us about all what they're doing in Kenya. This is all the time we have for our show this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember to send your answers to this week's puzzle to radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com.
I'm James Good.
And I am Eric Terrio, and you are listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio. Hope you have a blessed rest of the week.